Audio on demand from Vision Christian Media.
There's no retirement plan in God's economy. Just look at Daniel, whose spirituality and wisdom were so vibrant, even at age 90, that he was sought out by a king. Today on Turning Point, Dr. David Jeremiah continues the series, The Handwriting on the Wall, with a look at how Daniel responded to the summons and how it can help you grow in faith. Listen as David shares his message, Weighed and Wanting.
Well, we are studying the book of Daniel together. The series is called The Handwriting on the Wall, but we are in the fifth chapter right now, and we're in that signature part of the book where Belshazzar has a party, and all of a sudden the hand of God is writing on the wall. And the message is that they have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Well, right now we have our Bibles open to Daniel 5. It's time to get started. So let's find out what's going on in this message called Weighed and Wanting.
We began the exciting story of this momentous occasion in the life of Belshazzar, the grandson of King Nebuchadnezzar. You remember in the first four verses, we talked about the feast of Belshazzar. Then we talked about the finger of God, the feast of Belshazzar and the finger of God. And in verses 5 through 9, we discussed in verse 5 the supernatural sign when the hand wrote on the wall. And the sobering significance, verse 6, when the king was so frightened that his knees smote together and all the vertebrae in his back came loose and he couldn't stand up and he couldn't sit down and he was scared out of his mind and his face turned pale. And then we discussed in verses 7 through 9 the simultaneous summons, because at the moment the king was scared to death, he let out a shriek. The scripture says he cried for all of his brain trust to come in and tell him what was going on. And as usual, if you haven't kept score, they're now 0 for 3. They didn't do anything that night either, and they never will, because the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, neither can he know them, for they are spiritually discerned. And that brings us to verse 10. And I want to give you the next part of the outline. The fame of Daniel, verses 10 through 16. The faithfulness of Daniel, verses 17 through 29, and the fall of Babylon, verses 30 and 31. And we'll have some other points under all of that as we begin. We're looking now at the fame of Daniel. Twice in this section of Scripture, King Belshazzar says that he has heard of Daniel. Even though he had never used him in his kingdom knowingly, he was at the fringe area of Belshazzar's reign. In verse 14, he said, I have heard of you. And in verse 16, he repeats it. He said, even I have heard of you. Daniel was a famous man, a famous part of the history of Babylon. As we look at the fame of Daniel, we come first of all to the recollection of the queen. Verses 10 and 11, the recollection of the queen. She said, there is a man. The queen remembered Daniel. Somewhere in an apartment in the palace lived the queen mother. She was most probably not Belshazzar's wife, for the scripture says in verse 2 that the wives and the concubines of the kings and the princes were present in the drunken orgy that was going on in the banquet hall. More than likely, Belshazzar's wife was there. She was probably the queen mother, or the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar, and the wife of Nabonidus, who was Belshazzar's father. She obviously knew all about Nebuchadnezzar's reign. She recalls with great detail what Daniel had meant to Nebuchadnezzar. And she walks into the hall that night, having heard the noise and having heard the rumor of what had happened in the banquet hall. She walks into the hall where drunkenness and partying is in full sway, and she begins to recall for King Belshazzar the ministry of Daniel as she remembered it. It seems evident by her words that Daniel was not at the core of the Babylonian government. Certainly not under Belshazzar, like he had been under Nebuchadnezzar. He must have been assigned to some lower echelon. He probably had been given some insignificant position. I have an idea why. It is quite probable that when Belshazzar came to power, and he lived the kind of life that he lived, for he was nothing but a drunken, spoiled brat, he realized that having Daniel around wouldn't be very advantageous to his kingdom, so he assigned him someplace where out of sight was out of mind. And so he had forgotten about Daniel. He didn't know anything about him. He just put him aside. He'd been pushed aside, but the Queen Mother had never forgotten his role in the life of her father. She knew that though now Daniel was almost 90 years of age, he was the only hope in the kingdom for interpreting what was written on the plaster wall that night. And so she begins to tell Belshazzar what she knows about Daniel. I want you to notice that three times she reminds Belshazzar that Daniel had been involved with his grandfather. The word father in the text also stands for grandfather because the Chaldeans and the Hebrews had no word for grandfather. The word father refers to any ancestor. Three times she says, notice how it's graphically illustrated in verse 11. Like the wisdom of the gods was found in him, whom the king, Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say, thy father, she said. In other words, Belshazzar, this fella was connected with your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar. And you need to take note of what I'm going to say. She recalls Daniel. Now, let me just stop and ask this question. When your ministry is over and you're at the end of your life, and someone remembers what you were like at the zenith of your ministry and of your life as a Christian, what will they remember? Notice what she remembered about him. First of all, she remembered him as a significant man. She said, there is a man. All of the other men had been tried and they couldn't do it. And throughout all the kingdom, nobody seemed to know what to do, but there was a man. And in the mind of that queen, he was a significant man. There was a man among men, and that man's name was Daniel. She remembered Daniel as a man who stood out among the masses as a significant person. Secondly, this is exciting, she remembered Daniel as a spiritual man. She said, there is a man in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. It's the same phrase that Nebuchadnezzar used three times in the fourth chapter. As we studied that chapter, we saw Nebuchadnezzar say three times that Daniel was a man in whom was the spirit of the holy gods. You'll find that in chapter 4, verses 8, verse 9, and verse 18. And these are the same words that she used that were used by her father, that Daniel was a man filled with the spirit of the holy gods. He was a spiritual man. Wouldn't that be a thrilling thing? If when you had finished your ministry and you were in your twilight years, someone who was alive and remembered your life and ministry came forward and said, oh, I remember that man. He was a spiritual man. What a thrilling thought. Thirdly, she remembered him as a superior man. In verse 12, she says that he was a man who had an excellent spirit. The phrase literally means, in the language of the text, a man of surpassing ability. He's a man who was head and shoulders above the rest in terms of what he was and what he did. And of course, in verse 11, we're also told that he was made master over all of the other wise men. He was above the rest. He stood out in a crowd. Daniel had superior qualities, and the Queen Mother remembered that. As she thought about Daniel, in her mind's eye, she pictured the scene back in the reign of her father. And there was one man who stood out from all the rest because of his superiority, and that was Daniel. And then she also remembered him as a sensible man. These phrases that she used to describe his wisdom are exciting. She said he was a man filled with enlightenment. That means he had keen insight into things that were going on that day. He was a man of understanding. He had mental reflection on the events of his day. He was a man of wisdom. That is, he had discernment. And he was a man of knowledge. His head was filled with information. He was a man of sensibility. You know, I was thinking, because I was studying this passage, that if the only thing they remembered about any of us is that we had good sense, that'd be something in this day and age, wouldn't it? And then she goes on to remember him as a skillful man. These five things the Queen Mother remembered about Daniel, and when there was a need for his ministry, she recalled him. She said he was skillful because he interpreted dreams, and he revealed riddles and hard sentences. And the last one, she says, he dissolved doubts. That's a very interesting phrase. It literally means he was able to handle knotty problems. He was able to go into the heart of a problem and discern it and figure it out. That's the kind of man he was. And so as she stood there that night in the hall when all of the politicians were drunk and Belshazzar was scared, she said, there's a man. And let me tell you something about him. He's significant. He's spiritual. He's superior. He's sensible. And he's skillful. Belshazzar, if you got any sense, you'll get him in here right now. So verses 13 to 16, we see the king. And he's calling Daniel. Now get the picture, folks. Daniel's an old man in his late 80s or early 90s, and he's ushered into the banquet hall where 1,000 drunk politicians are seated around tables, and the king sits there in stark terror at the wall where there is a writing. Isn't it interesting that Daniel wasn't present at the time when he was needed? In fact, if you go back in the history of this book, you'll discover that he wasn't present when Nebuchadnezzar had his first dream, and he wasn't present when Nebuchadnezzar had his second dream, and he wasn't present at the written message that God wrote on the wall, and he was clearly never present when the humanist pagan counselors were called in first to give their interpretation. He is always by himself, away from the drunkenness, away from the partying, and away from the secular humanist counselors, all by himself. And when they go through all of the trappings to try to figure out what's going on, their last resort is always Daniel. And he is ultimately called. There's an old English preacher by the name of Joseph Parker who's just been a great blessing to many preachers down through the age. Joseph Parker has a good word for all of us who are preachers on this passage. This is what he said. He says, "Preachers of the word, you will be wanted someday by Belshazzar. You were not at the beginning of the feast. You will be there before the banquet hour is closed. The king will not ask you to drink wine, but he will ask you to tell the secret of his pain and heal the malady of his heart. Just wait your time, preachers. You are nobody now. Who cares for preachers and teachers and seers, men of insight, while the wine goes around and the feast is unfolding its tempting luxuries? But the preacher will have his opportunity. They will send for him when all other friends have failed. May he then come fearlessly, independently, asking only to be a channel through which divine communication can be addressed. And then may he speak to the listening trouble of the world." End of quote. That's a good word. You know, sometimes we preachers, we read what the press says about us and how unimportant we are. You know, they used to have a list of the most important professions, and we're not even on the list anymore. I mean, we're so far down in the thinking of people. I'll tell you something, friend. There's coming a day when preachers are going to be more significant than they are in the prelude to the tribulation. And we're going to live through the prelude, even though we won't live through the tribulation. When things start to heat up more than they are, you're going to see the churches where Bible preaching pastors teach and preach the word of God jammed to the rafters. And they aren't all going to be Christians either, because folks are going to come to hear what God has to say. There was a time when Belshazzar decided it was all right to hear the preacher, and he called for Daniel. Well, in verse 13, Daniel's ushered in before the king. Now notice, the king first inquires as to whether Daniel is the same Daniel who was taken by Nebuchadnezzar. Now there's something going on here you don't want to miss. Picture in your mind's eye the king sitting at his table, and he's got the golden chalice that he stole out of the temple that he brought from the place where it was stored in Babylon, and he's filled it full of his wine, and he's been holding that up to the gods of gold and silver and bronze and stone, and he's got that chalice in his hand. I just have to believe that. And Daniel marches in before him, and he stands right in front of him, and the first thing the king does is he looks at that chalice, and he looks at Daniel, and he looks at that cup, and he says, "Daniel, you're not that Daniel that came over here to Babylon the same time we stole these vessels, are you? You're not the same Daniel that came over here when we brought the hostages and we took the vessels from the temple and brought them chapter one." That's what he's asking, you see. He's under so much conviction. He is convicted by the presence of judgment on the wall and sin in his hands and the prophet in front of him. Somebody has said, "This is not Daniel before Belshazzar. This is Belshazzar before Daniel." Just like Felix and Paul in the New Testament. Well, verse 14, he repeats the same list about Daniel that the queen had given, with one exception. I just point this out because we're not going to go back over all of this. He adds the word "excellent" before the last word in the verse. And that's the only difference. The rest of the words are exactly the same words the queen used to describe Daniel. Verse 15, he reports the failure of his own brain trust to interpret the writing, just as today's secular, natural, wise men cannot know the things of the Spirit of God. He says, "You know, I brought all my brain trust in and I asked them this question. They didn't know anything about it. So, Daniel, I'm back down to you. It's the last resort. I'm calling on God." And that brings us to verse 16, where he promises Daniel that he will reward him if he tells him what he wants to hear. Now, I want you to notice this. The only thing King Belshazzar knew by way of motivation was the only thing the world knows today. The only motivation the world knows how to give, even to spiritual people, is position and possessions and power. Daniel, you tell me what I want to know, and I'll give you a good position, and I'll give you great possessions, and I'll put in your hands great power. That's the way the world works. That's the only kind of motivation they know. You walk out into the marketplace today, and the whole world is revolving around those three things: position and possession and power. That's all the world knows. Daniel, you do what I want, you can have all those things. Now, here's where it gets exciting. We come to the faithfulness of Daniel. Verses 17 to 29. Transfer yourself into that royal banquet hall and listen for just a moment. There stands the tall and reverend prophet. He has not a word of sympathy for the king. He doesn't have anything good to say about Belshazzar. You know, we learned when Daniel was involved with Nebuchadnezzar that he really came to like that old king. Remember when he was interpreting the dream back in the fourth chapter, and he realized as he came to grips with the dream that it was bad news for the king? And he said, Nebuchadnezzar, I wish this was true of your enemies and those who hate you, but unfortunately it's true for you. And you could see the heart of Daniel burning because of his love for Nebuchadnezzar. But I'll tell you something, he had no love for Belshazzar except in the Spirit of God. You know why? Belshazzar has profaned the holiness of Daniel's God. And there isn't anything that gets to the heart of a holy prophet more than that. Belshazzar had lifted up wine to the pagan gods with the vessels that belonged to the holy God. Daniel stands there in front of him, and the white hot anger of a righteous indignation that belongs to the prophetic office is burning within his bones. And so his voice and his brow and his words and his composed manner and his solemnity are all in deep accord with the Spirit who wrote those awful words on the wall. You see, Daniel knew he was about to utter some of the last words that that old royal sinner would ever hear in this life. I like what he did. First of all, he did four things. The first thing he did was he refused the king's gifts. Notice, Daniel answered, verse 17, and said unto the king, "Let thy gifts be to thyself, and give your rewards to somebody else." Wow. In the vernacular of today, Belshazzar, you can hang it on your nose. He respected Nebuchadnezzar, but he rejected Belshazzar. And it is obvious as you study this that Daniel has developed a holy hatred for the sin of this wicked king. He refused his gifts because he didn't want to be obligated to him. It's like Abraham in the Old Testament. Remember Abraham when he went out there and he met the king of Sodom, and the king of Sodom wanted to give him all these nice things. I love Abraham. He's got the same kind of guts and grit in his spirit. Here's what he said. Abraham said to the king of Sodom, "I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abraham rich." Genesis 14, 22 and 23. Abraham said, "Look, you can keep your stuff. I don't need your stuff. Prestige, power, and position don't mean anything to a man of God." And so Daniel told him he can hang on to it. He refused his gifts. Now, he's like Samuel. Let me just give you some things to write down in your notes. Some other men of God have done that very thing. I mentioned Abraham. If you want to see Samuel's integrity like that, you go to 1 Samuel chapter 12, verses 1 to 5, and his story is told. And Moses is the same way, Numbers chapter 16 and verse 15. And Paul, in Acts 20 and verse 33, says, "I have coveted no man's silver and no man's gold." In essence, what Daniel's saying to Belshazzar is, keep your gifts and give your favors to somebody else. He refused the king's gifts. Now notice, secondly, Daniel's working into a sermon now. He's going to preach a sermon to this king, and it's kind of exciting because he's warming up to it now. Having refused his gifts, he reviews his heritage and his history. Notice, then Daniel answered and said, "O thou king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and language trembled and feared before him, whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would he set up, and whom he would he put down. And when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. He was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses, and they fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whomsoever he will." That's all chapter 4. We don't need to go back over that. That's simply a reminder to Belshazzar of what happened to his grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar. Now, you see, the purpose of citing history in the introduction to his sermon was in order to help Belshazzar see himself in the same place as was Nebuchadnezzar as it related to God. And then he points his finger at Belshazzar and he indicts him, having reviewed the history of his kingdom and of his heritage. And he gets done with that little historical review. He now puts his finger right in the nose of Belshazzar and he says, "But thou," having reviewed his heritage, he now comes to rebuke his sin. I want you to notice that he brings three charges against Belshazzar as he rebukes him. First of all, he charges him with premeditated sin. Premeditated sin. Verse 22. "And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart." Now underline this. "Though thou knewest all of this." Though thou knewest all of this. What? How God deals with a proud man. How God takes a man who defies him and brings him low. Belshazzar knew it all. And he just, in the face of it, sinned in the same way as his grandfather. You know, the word "although" in the text literally should be translated by the words "in front of." Even though this whole thing was in front of you and you saw it, you still. In fact, most commentators believe that Belshazzar not only did this in ignorance, but he did it deliberately, presumptuously with knowledge. He did what he did not in spite of what he knew, but because of what he knew. He purposefully desecrated these vessels as if to say to God that he wasn't in awe of him at all. "Maybe my grandfather was in awe of you, but I'm not God. Watch this." He lifted up those wine vessels before God.
What an act of desecration, and so defiant in the face of the Almighty. Of course, you know that's not the end of the story. Tomorrow we will conclude the discussion of weight and wanting, and you will see how this all turns out.
For more information on Dr. Jeremiah's series, The Handwriting on the Wall, please visit our website, davidjeremiah.org/radio, where we offer two free ways to help you stay connected: our monthly magazine, Turning Points, and our daily email devotional. Sign up today at davidjeremiah.org/radio. When you do, be sure to ask for your copy of David's helpful and encouraging new book, Answers to Questions About Living in the Last Days. It's yours for a gift of any amount. You can also purchase the Jeremiah Study Bible in the English Standard Version, the New International Version, as well as in the standard or large print in the New King James, all with useful notes and articles by Dr. Jeremiah. Go to davidjeremiah.org/radio for all the details. Join us tomorrow as we continue The Handwriting on the Wall here on Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.